Welcome back to Suddenly I See, a gender toolkit on CICK 93.9 FM in the Smithers, BC area. I'm Christine Bruce.
And I'm Laszlo Polgar.
And in this episode, we're going to talk about how gender is everywhere, how it requires your visual and verbal participation, and what it feels like to call somebody out. We're calling this episode, Gender is Everywhere, and that's a good thing. Most of us don't think about gender in everyday life, but it affects us minutely. I'm thinking of the moment two people meet at a door. Who goes first and who holds it for the other? See what I mean? So see how these demonstrate how all of us participate in manifestations of gender all day long? I've got an exercise for you, Wizzy. Spend a day this week noticing these manifestations in your own community and how you participate in gender. Consider how some of these ways don't work for everyone. If you're not sure what I mean by that comment, remember the gender-neutral bathroom anecdote we shared in the first episode? These manifestations work for some people, but maybe not for everyone. Okay, now let's consider two ways we participate, visual and verbal. Lee starts this section in the book with the comment, "A neat trick of gender is how it hides in plain sight. It's everywhere, but we don't typically notice it until somebody does it what we consider wrong." And not in the sense of bad, but rather not the way everyone else is doing it. Laszlo, I noticed your gender expression immediately and was really grateful for that because there are landmines around things like this and I don't want to step on one and offend you and make myself awkward. It gives me cues to watch my language, to be careful. And tell me how that feels for you, your visual participation element.
I'd say like, when I'm trying to kind of like dress in a way that gives kind of those cues, it is, I feel like I dress in a way that is just androgynous enough that I can kind of go on, run under the radar for people who aren't looking for it. But if you're looking for it, if you're noticing those kinds of things like you did, then it's kind of in your face if you're like really think about it, but then you have to think about it. So that gender expression is kind of that identifier to be like, hey, I'm also one of you to other kind of like queer people.
Right.
And then have that kind of sense of community, even if we never really have a conversation past just saying hi to each other or like looking at each other from across the street, it's still that kind of identifier of there's a community and there's other people around you.
Sorry to interrupt, but are you aware of that every time you get dressed? Like, I get dressed because I want to wear something colorful, but, you know, do you feel like you have to be aware of that all the time?
I definitely do feel like I have to be aware of how I am presenting myself most of the time that I am going out and doing things. And when I'm not really thinking about it and kind of just putting it to the wayside and how I might appear to somebody else, then I'm very often in the most comfortable thing that I can put on.
Like pajamas.
Yeah, like pajamas.
Listen, Wizzy, we're sitting in the train car in our pajamas today because that's what we felt like doing.
It's great. And so, like, I definitely do think about it most of the time when I'm getting dressed and, like, putting together an outfit that I'm going to wear for the day. I do end up thinking about how am I going to be perceived today and is that going to make me feel comfortable?
Right.
Because sometimes I could be perceived as a lot more feminine, but I might feel a little bit raw about being perceived like a girl, so I might want to dress a little bit more masculine and then have people question it a little bit more.
Okay.
So definitely, I think it does kind of, it's a very conscious decision for me and a lot of other people.
Wow, something I never had to consider. All right. Good to know. Okay, Wizzy, so we've got an exercise for you, another one. When you're in public, notice when others do a gender category in a way that you didn't expect. So I remember in the last episode, I talked about a man wearing nail polish, right? Mm-hmm. Something that you don't expect. Just watch for something like that. And it's important that you can start seeing it. Smithers is a small town, and Lee suggests that it's most likely to happen in a boring public space. So you're in the line at the theater or at a checkout, and the first step is to just notice it. And then ask yourself why something like that triggered a response in you. Who stood out? What did they do and what happened around them? So I think it's really important that you can notice it, and I think it's also really important that you be careful when you notice it, what you do, your reaction.
Definitely. The reaction is very important, in my opinion. There's a lot of times when you want to do that double take and be like, oh my goodness, did I see what I just saw?
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think the double take is bad as much as it could be considered rude. Definitely don't stare. That's off the board. Don't stare. It Lee advises to resist a second look, that double take. Lee advises to resist that second look, that like double take in their book. And I know how hard that is, that you want to like confirm and kind of get caught up that what you saw was real. But it can be vulnerable for that person. If they're not feeling that kind of like comfort in how they're expressing themselves, then it can be considered a little bit rude.
Do you think it's also maybe outing them? Because if you're staring at them, then somebody else might notice that you're staring at them.
Well, I wouldn't say it's outing them to the public eye as much as it's outing them in their eye.
Right.
Like, you noticing, they'll notice that you're noticing. And if they're not ready or feel comfortable to be noticed in that environment, then it can make them feel uncomfortable. I always kind of go at it with, you know, because I have a bit of a staring problem and a double look problem, is I always kind of approach it with, if I catch myself looking for a little bit too long, then I always follow it up with something positive, like a compliment, or I come over and I start talking to them and I'm like, you just look so interesting, or make them feel like their presence isn't a disturbance as much as it's just they're so interesting to like see, and you kind of are like infatuated with it.
It's an attraction.
It's an attraction. You're not disgusted by it. You're, I guess, excited by it. Like, you're seeing this difference in the world, and it's super cool, and you're like, oh my goodness. And then for people like me, it's very much like, oh my goodness, there's other people like me in this town. So I definitely catch myself staring or doing a little double take. But yeah, following it up with that kind of like acknowledging that there's still a person that you're looking at is very important to kind of tone down that would be rudeness when you're looking at somebody.
Right. I remember once seeing somebody who didn't gender express the way I expected them to, and they noticed me looking. And so I gave them a big smile and a thumbs up.
Yeah. No, totally.
And then that was the end of the conversation. And I thought, woof. Because there's nothing worse than feeling that you've sent somebody away feeling less than.
Yeah. Like, even, it's so crazy, like, even just a stare can affect somebody's day.
Yeah.
And it's some people are just trying to fly under the radar, and it's very exposing to be noticed in situations where you don't really want to be noticed. Like, when you're just trying to get your coffee for the day and
you someone's just staring blend you down.
And you're like, oh my goodness, stop looking at me.
Yeah.
But then that kind of like that stare down, that like judgy feeling that you get, like you don't belong here, people are like mad that you're around, it kind of, I feel, gets diminished when that person actually has the compassion to kind of approach you and make you feel like you're not a zoo attraction.
Yeah.
You're an actual right. person.
Right. Well spoken. Thank you, Vassal. I appreciate that comment.
Yeah.
Remember I said that there's visual and verbal. Verbal might be a conversation with a family member or a friend or a colleague, or it might be a perfect stranger. It's one thing to participate by looking, but another to tell them that they've done gender wrong. And many of us don't realize we're doing it. It's unconscious. So here's the anecdote. I'm 67, and my generation, you know, when we were in our early 20s, we were all expected to get married and have babies. One of my best friends didn't have any babies, and one day she confided to me that she was going to the hospital for some tests. Back then, IVF was new and not always accessible, and I was smart enough, I'm really proud of myself, that I kept my mouth shut. I just listened to what my friend was telling me. Now, a few weeks later, I was at a church event, one of those the baby showers, and all the moms were there, so obviously my friend was not there because she was not a mom. And there was a break in the conversation, and one of the older attendees asked another of my friends sitting next to me why she didn't have any girls. And this friend of mine happened to have four boys. It's not like she's got any control of what pops out, but here was the question. And there was this unpleasant silence, and my friend gently commented, oh, you're confusing me with my sister, using humor. And her sister had four girls, which was a big topic of conversation at the church for some reason. And Then another board participant looked at me and said, why do you only have one? And at the time, I only had a daughter. Well, again, I don't have a lot of control over this situation. And it's really none of your business when I decide to have more children. But you'll notice that you can get into a group of people and that will happen. People will ask you that kind of question. In those days, even now, I think, I don't have a lot of patience for that kind of pressure. And I shook my head and I looked at my hands and I looked at the ceiling and I looked at my glass of lemonade and I tried really hard to avoid this impossible conversation because it was going to go negative really fast and I would attack. That's what I do in situations like that. And I know I'm going to attack. So this little group continued brightly, oh, get working on it. We'd like a boy next. And I gave a weak smile and hoped the subject would change. It was really uncomfortable for me, but remember that my friend, who didn't have any children, wasn't there. And I was so glad at that moment that my friend did not attend, because that was a bombshell. And if they had attacked her for not having any children without realizing the full story, that she was undergoing tests, my friend never had children. My friend is the guardian for both of my children, let me just say, because she's a remarkable human being. She and her husband would have made really great parents if something had happened to me and my husband. And to this day, she's a remarkable friend to my children. And I just think that we have to be a lot more careful about our verbal participation in how gender works.
Yes, definitely.
Laszlo?
I can say there's definitely like times that are not exactly the same, but very similar, where it's just that kind of like, oh man, I'm glad that my friend doesn't have to be here because their reaction would be so much worse, or the effect that these words would have on them is so much worse, especially when it comes to kind of gender stuff. I've been in a lot of awkward situations where I've had to start defending myself and start having to like explain why I am the way that I am, and it happens a lot more often than you'd think. And then I'm like, oh, I'm glad it's just me that has to do this and not these other friends that I know are much more vulnerable about these things. And then that kind of like, it kind of makes me think like, why do we have to defend ourselves with these kinds of topics and situations? And that can just be for gender or for anything, like any kind of personal story that we have about ourselves. I don't understand why we need to defend every little aspect of it. And I guess we kind of feel the need to do it because we're being like judged or scrutinized for it. And then we feel the need to have that connection, like, no, I'm not wrong for these reasons. Like, why are you implying that I'm wrong for these reasons or that I have control over this? And then people misunderstand, and then you have to defend yourself even more. And then,
you know, then it gets really awkward for everybody.
Yeah. And then it just becomes kind of this like battle between like people's pride, because you have so much pride in yourself and confidence in yourself that you're right about this situation. And then when you're faced with the fact that you could be wrong about something, you just start really hammering into the like, no, I have to be right about this. And so there's a lot of pride, this person and how they're expressing something is wrong. And then there's that pride to defend yourself because you know you're not wrong, but then you're being faced with this scrutiny. So I do think it is very much like so sure that you're right that you end up butting heads over something that you could be wrong about.
You know, years ago, I met an Olympic rower. I happened to be a recreational coordinator at a rowing club, and one of the Olympians showed up one day, Kathleen Heddle, whom I love. But Kathleen and her partner showed up and they said, hey, are there any boats here that a couple of hacks could take out? And we all knew who this was, so that we knew these were not hacks. And nobody wanted to address that elephant in the room. Oh my God, there's an Olympian in our midst. Funny enough, my daughter was the one who broke the ice and said, hey, you're Kathleen Heddle. Want to come for lunch to my house? But that was a valuable lesson for me, because here's somebody who knows everything there is to know about rowing, and her attitude was, you can never know everything.
Yeah.
And I became very humbled that day in my approach to a lot of things. Am I right about it all the time? No, but I try really hard not to be strict in my assumptions now. There's probably stuff I don't know, so let's just try not to sound too certain and confident about what I know.
I think that goes for like both sides of the kind of argument around this kind of discussion as well. Like, there's so many times when you're so sure that you're like confident about this kind of information, but I kind of want you to like take a step back and like question yourself about that and question that maybe you are wrong about something. And it's not bad to be wrong. It's not something that you should be embarrassed of, or making mistakes is a part of everybody's a human being. And so everyone's going to make a mistake at least once in their life. And so like making a mistake or being wrong about something is never something to be embarrassed about. And then on the other side of that spectrum, there's the people who are so like prideful of themselves and so sure of themselves that they kind of meet this combatants of miseducation with hostility. Mm. And while I can understand that you might feel personally attacked and need to defend yourself as righteously and hard as you can, it can end up leading that miseducated person down a deeper rabbit hole of, I'm right because these people are treating me poorly for this kind of decision that I've made.
Right.
And like thing that I think about. Because the more hostile you are about somebody's opinion, the more they kind of get stuck in that opinion. I've never really seen telling somebody that they're an awful, horrible human being for just like thinking something is really helping anybody.
That's never going to go down a good direction. Yeah.
That's kind of setting up that expectation that they're always going to be that way, and putting this title on somebody just because they're confused about something just doesn't seem very fair to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. Trying to meet in the middle somewhere and saying, hey, yeah, this isn't my experience, but I want to understand it.
Yeah. Like, I understand being offended and feeling hurt and raw about certain situations, but at that point, that is a time when you need to remove yourself from the situation and not start that discussion, because it's going to go poorly. You're going to get even more upset, and you're going to upset the other person, and then they're going to get pushed even deeper into their mindset, and it's just not a fun time for anybody involved.
Yeah.
And there's so much more space for the discussion and
later when it's
everybody's got a calm head,
yeah,
and the passion isn't there anymore, and it's kind of like we can have a good conversation before it starts getting amped up into that like defensiveness again, because maybe it will,
but maybe it won't.
Let's try starting it at a level where everybody's comfortable to just talk,
yeah,
and let's not yell at each other.
All right, good advice.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's a listener-supported radio station, that means that people can get daily, every day, a different way of looking at the world. Not just what the corporate media want you to see, but a different picture, different understanding, but a different picture, a different understanding. Not only can you hear it, but you can participate in it. You can add your own thoughts, you know, and you can learn something and so on. Well, that's the way, people become human, you know. That's the way you become human participants in a social and political system.
I'm Allie Howard from Nature's Pantry, and we're proud to support Suddenly I See on CICK Community Radio.
Hey, my name is Wendy Wright. I'm the director of the Smithers Public Library, and I want everyone in this community and beyond to know that libraries are for everyone.
You're listening to Suddenly I See, a gender toolkit for the Smithers, BC area. I'm Christine Bruce.
And I'm Laszlo Polgar.
In the first half of this episode, Gender is Everywhere, we've talked about how gender requires both our visual and our verbal participation, and how those can both go off the cliff fast if you're not prepared. Next up, explicit questioning and calling out. So explicit questioning and calling out happens a lot when we don't realize it, and it's a lot of it is unconscious. I think self-awareness is a big challenge these days, but it's an important challenge, and we should all be taking ourselves out for a little coffee and saying, okay, let me think about this again. So remember I said I was smart enough to just listen when my friend told me her news that she was being tested because she couldn't get pregnant. There are a lot of other less healthy reactions out there. And Laszlo, do you recognize any or all of these in your life? Because maybe you have some good examples and want to explain them to us.
Yeah, I've got like a little list here, and I can kind of identify times when I have faced this kind of reaction just by being around somebody. Getting that like look of skepticism.
There we go.
Of like explaining myself to somebody or introducing myself even, or really just walking into a room and somebody gives you that like, oh, kind of look. That's not really, that's just something you're making up kind of deal.
Right, you're just pretending
to Yeah, you're just pretending to do this, or it's just kind of that phase that you're going through. Oh. And I have been told many times that it's a phase that it's I'm going phase. Through since I was 10 years old.
Oh, that's so sorry.
It's disappointing, but then it's really like a haha, I got you, because really was it a phase when I'm still like this and it's been 9 years?
It's a long phase.
It's a very, very long phase. There's that, like, exaggerated emotional response where somebody gets really angry or offended or upset over how they're perceiving you or how you present yourself.
Huh. That must be uncomfortable.
It is a little bit uncomfortable. I can't really blame a lot of the people that react that way, and I haven't had too many times where people react that way right off the bat, and it kind of ends up being how they react during a conversation discussing topics that I identify with. But it's very awkward and not a great conversation when somebody is reacting that way. And then also just very embarrassing for all the parties involved. Because right. I can't see that how it's very comfortable being the person that's angry in that moment. Because it is very embarrassing when you have an explosion of anger in public.
Well, they've just exposed themselves. That can't be very comfortable.
Like, even just exposing yourself as someone who thinks somebody else is wrong for certain reasons can be a vulnerable thing in itself. And so, yeah, I have gotten kind of that explosion of anger sometimes when I express that I have been trans for a very long time, specifically, and have been transitioning from a very young age. A lot of people do not like that idea and think that I made a mistake or that my parents were wrong and were somehow, like, quote-unquote, grooming me into being trans.
Really?
Which is definitely not what happened.
Oh, wow.
I learned about that I was trans through experiences with friends and learning about people and whatnot by myself more than being pushed into it by any kind of parental figure in my life. Definitely not how it ended up going on.
So can I interject? I told one of my friends that a friend whose child was experiencing a transition moment and they were 6 years old. And mm-hmm. my friend's comment was, how can they even know at 6 years old?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have an answer for that. I just try not to assume that I know anything about the situation. So if if a friend says their six-year-old is going through transition moment, I'm like, good for them. Good. I hope it works out.
I hope it works out. And I hope that they feel happy with themselves.
Yeah.
And that's not even a side comment. I genuinely hope that they feel happy with themselves as they grow up. Because a lot of people think that when children decide to transition, it's like suddenly they're going into surgeries and on all these hormones.
Yeah,
that's right. Suddenly all of this medical stuff is happening. But there in Canada, there's a lot of laws around it and a lot of roadblocks and a lot of ways to make sure that a child isn't being pushed into this if they do not want to. You quite literally have to be diagnosed with gender dysphoria to be able to go on hormone therapy. So there are ways to basically know and be comforted by the fact that no, you are not going to see people that are just transitioning off of a whim or transitioning their children off of a whim, because the children need full consent with themselves as well.
And when I say that a six-year-old is having a transition moment, I'm not saying that they're taking drugs. I guess what I'm saying is they're experimenting with different gender expressions to see what feels right for them.
That's exactly how it is at a young age. It's really just self-expression, and you shouldn't be scared of self-expression.
Right.
And at that age, it probably could just be a little bit of a phase that they're going through where they just wanted to dress like a boy or a girl and feel that way. And honestly, sometimes they're not even really thinking about how it might impact their gender. And it's just, I want to be this way. I want to dress this way because it makes me happy. And then sometimes it's just us as adults that put that label onto them.
Right.
When it's a little kid. Right. They don't really know about any of that really specifically. And if they do end up becoming out and very much trans in the future and being like, yes, this is a decision I've continued to like go through with, then that's all good for them. That's great.
Right.
I'm glad that they were able to be happy at such a young age.
Right.
I know a couple of kids who the firstborn is a girl, the secondborn is a boy. The boy wants to wear the pink. The boy wants to wear the, but it's because it's his sister's dresses that he wants to wear, right? He loves the sister, the older sister. And his decision to wear those dresses doesn't mean that he's going to become trans in future. Or if he does become trans in future, it has nothing to do with the fact that he wore his sister's dresses.
Yeah. No, I think like it's a very complicated and deep conversation, especially when we talk about like kids, because again, people are kind of right when they say kids don't really understand because they're just not really thinking about it. Like more often than not, the only thing that a kid really understands about gender is that the girls play with Barbies and the boys play with cars.
Yeah. But if they're lucky, they're in a family where I mean, I made sure both my kids got to play with whatever.
Yeah.
Toys are non-gendered, in my opinion.
Yeah. They could get lucky and then have that kind of like where that doesn't even matter. And so what does gender matter to a child?
It's a construct.
Yeah. Which is why most kids that are transitioning young, hitting double digits is like, that's when it kind of starts, those feelings start kind of getting involved, because that's when your peers and the people around you start conforming to those gender roles much more, and you start noticing that you don't really fit into those.
And there's pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's more and more pressure, and you start to get those kind of like feelings that you're not that comfortable fitting into these kinds of standards that have been set out for you.
So how do we make it more comfortable for people? Like, why can't we just throw out the constructs? Laszlo, what do you think would help?
I guess like pseudo throwing them out, like not entirely throwing them out, but raising kids where they don't have to think about it, where they don't have to be combating this, like, oh, well, if I wear a dress, I must be a girl. And, oh, well, if I play with cars, I must be a boy. I don't think that that's really necessary to teach our kids at all. It doesn't help them develop. It doesn't help them really make any friends at all.
Yeah.
It's just kind of this weird standard that kids know about and creates, I guess, a bit of hostility with other children, because you're in a group of kids and you're that like odd kid out, that you're like a little boy who likes wearing dresses and playing with dolls, and then all of your other guy friends are going to call you weird and make fun of you. And that's really just what they've been taught, is that if you play with these things, if you do these things, you're a girl now and you're not a boy.
So not really, stereotyping.
Yeah, yeah. I think just kind of leave that kind of discussion out of raising kids, I guess.
Yeah.
It's not really necessary. It just creates like playground bullies.
Yeah. I have a friend in Ontario who had two boys and two girls, and the father was a carpenter, and the two boys followed in his footsteps. And one of the girls was a lesbian, and she's now as good a carpenter as the boys. And the mom said, yeah, it's just me and the one other girl that can't swing a hammer. Isn't that great? I love hearing stories like that, because that to me is a healthy family.
Yeah, that's a healthy family. And then that's also like subverting what you'd consider like a woman, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, a girl swinging a hammer. How dare she? Well, why is that a standard?
Why not? Yeah.
Yeah.
I want them working on my house now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so back to the questioning and calling out. Have you got a couple of other ideas?
Yeah,
here?
Yeah. I'd say there's also times when somebody is trying to come to you in a raw moment, you kind of have that, oh, look, we can connect to each other in this kind of way, and oh, you're not alone in this kind of context. And you start sharing your own stories or some advice when they're really just looking for a shoulder to cry on.
Oh.
Or they just need direct support towards them. And then that kind of anecdote or advice can kind of pull away from that moment of feeling vulnerable and just needing attention.
So this is one of those moments where conversation is about, we're talking about your gender expression, mm-hmm. and they're trying to pull the conversation back to them. They need the attention. Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah. Like for me, I'll have that kind of inclination to share anecdotes. I don't see it as I'm trying to pull the attention back to me as much as I'm trying to make them feel less alone for their experience. Mm-hmm. But whether your intention is that or not, it can still kind of seem as that you're pulling that attention back. And, right. Like, you still want the mic, and this is about you now and not about them.
So really, I guess the advice there is to just listen.
Yeah, just listen.
You don't need to intervene anything.
If you feel the inclination to give advice or share a story, ask them first. Because maybe they are interested in hearing it, but they just need that moment. I'm part of this still identifier, which would be getting asked.
Good advice. Oh, yeah. Good advice.
And then for I'd say this is kind of probably the worst one. I would much rather be verbally called out and have to fight for myself than be in a room of people where I'm making myself vulnerable, and then maybe I get some backlash, and then I turn to my closest friends or something and they're completely silent.
Oh, that's devastating.
Yeah. And there's no support in that terms of you're too nervous to bring up any kind of topic or discussion that you have yourself, so you just stay silent.
Oh, and that's so awkward, because what do you do to break that?
Yeah, and it is kind of devastating in a way. I have to deal with this. Yeah. I have to talk about this because I'm the person that's being called out or skepticized about, and then my support systems are just basically too shy or just too nervous or not sure what to say, or maybe inexperienced. Yeah. But then when you're inexperienced, the least that you can do is give that nudge and acceptance and be oh, well, maybe this person is right for how they're expressing themselves, instead of just staying completely silent. Because honestly, the silent treatment hurts so much. And it's very, very common to have that kind of reaction about something that you're not used to when it's a close friend that it's about, because you just don't know how to react. But I would much rather a reaction personally than complete and utter silence from any party. Communication is always key, even if it's messy at first.
Yeah.
The trouble with all these well-intended outcomes is that sometimes the result, it results in the person self-isolating. You've been called into questions, you can open up entirely, or you can start finding spaces where you don't stand out. We all do that. It's safe. Lee's advice for situations where you might feel your reaction was not great, is to find common ground. If you're ever having these kinds of reactions, then that question of what can I find about this person that I can relate to is always a good way to go about it.
I like that advice a lot. I've been in situations where it's gotten awkward and it's gotten quiet and I don't know what to do, and then I just run away. And that's not a good thing. So, I mean, it is going to be hard. It's a Tinder keg. But if you can go to the person and say, what do we have in common? What do I see in you that is also in me?
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be a gender thing.
Yeah, it can be anything. And you can probably find something in common with all of those kinds of reactions.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if you're the person that's the reaction you're getting. If I were to say something that is received with an explosion of anger and they're so mad at me and I'm like, whoa, then I guess our common ground that we would be, we're both very passionate people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good.
And
good
you can
one.
Be passionate about the wrong things, but you're still passionate.
Passionate.
I love passionate people, because passionate people are just so building blocks to a lot of groups and communities, is those people that have that energy to be that passionate.
We get things done.
Yeah. And that explosion of anger that a lot of people have is out of passion, and it might be misdirected, but it is still not a bad thing to be that passionate about something.
Yeah. Thanks, Laszlo.
No problem.
And that's a wrap for Suddenly I See this week on CICK 93.9 FM in the Smithers, BC area. We hope you found it helpful as you begin considering what your own gender toolkit might look like. Did you know that November is Transgender Awareness Month? Pretty cool that we have excellent resources like Dr. Ayrton's book, Gender, Your Guide. We want to hear from you. You can call the CICK station at 250-847-8769 and leave a message. You can email us at CICK_suddenlyic@gmail.com. And for now, we have a Facebook page called Suddenly I See, a gender toolkit for the Smithers, BC area. See you in a couple of weeks when we'll consider what it means to be a gender expert. Until then, keep well, Wizzy.